recording again.
Hello and welcome to Art and Labor. We are a podcast dedicated to a lot of things, really. Dedicated to going where our minds will go.
Yeah.
I'm Lucia Love.
I'm OK Fox.
And we have our readums here for you. Oh yeah, I guess I'll intro this. So I started putting together more readings about the movement of realism in art and the way that it changes and sort of evolves off of previous iterations of this philosophy. And I've been trying to like test out the readings with different groups. Mm-hmm. So I brought this Boris Groys piece towards the new realism to the paint school program that I'm doing to see what other painters thought about this sort of like line of thought, because I guess one of the more organized forms of realism is the sort of like Courbet and Manet and these painters who had like a pretty strong political praxis that you know, they actually took time outside of their studios.
Wow.
And like they like became engaged in resistance movements and like
where the people
are. Yeah, like Paris Commune shit.
Ooh.
And I thought, you know, it was really interesting to have this combination of militant leftist ideals, but then also have an art that wasn't necessarily propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, here's still the whole breadth of life and experience and things that people are going through in all of these scenes from, you know, like the world around us can be elevated to history and passed on to future generations to consider, like, what, you know, what is the response to these things and how can you like build a philosophical framework that allows you to talk about the values of the images that you're seeing, and like then where does like the image correspond to your actual existence. And so then I brought this Boris Groys piece in because he talks a lot about the way that like there's like a permeable or you know there's like a very loose scrim between your dream and reality, and like the things that you can possibly create always have to begin as an idealized form before they can be realized.
Uh-huh.
And like what does that mean? And it's kind of cool because it's, I mean, this piece is a little bit older now, I think. Oh, it's from 2016. The year that reality died.
Yeah, seriously.
It dies and it dies and it dies again. And then a new realism is born that incorporates all of the insane surrealism that we gained from previous, total meltdowns and like things that we just couldn't possibly even conceive of having to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, yeah, so I thought it might be cool to bring this to the art and labor folks.
Yeah, so are we going to read take turns like we normally do?
Yeah, why not? Okay. This one's like it's a shortish one, so this one...
Cool.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I'll start it out. Towards the new realism... starts out with a picture of Via Selman's desert, and it's just a bunch of little tiny rocks. It's a lithograph on paper. It's the most boring thing I've ever seen. okay. Recently, we have seen a growing interest in realism, which for a long time seemed historically passé. But the notion of realism is not as obvious as it seems. One often understands realism to mean the production of mimetic images of reality. One can, of course, agree with this definition. However, the question remains, how do we initially meet reality? How do we discover reality in order to become able to make an image of it? Of course, we can speak about reality as everything that presents itself to our natural, uninformed, and technologically unarmed gaze. Traditional icons seem to us to be non-realistic because they seek to present the other, normally non-visible world. And artworks that seek to confront us with the essential core of the world or with a particular artist's subjective vision are usually not recognized as realistic either. We would also not speak of realism when looking at pictures produced with the help of a microscope or telescope. Realism is often defined as the readiness to reject religious and philosophical visions and speculations, as well as technologically produced images. Instead, realism usually involves the reproduction of an average, ordinary, profane view of the world. However, this profane vision of the world is not especially exciting. The desire to depict and reproduce this profane image of the world cannot be explained by its alleged beauty, which it obviously does not have.
We initially discover reality not as a simple sum of facts. Rather, we discover reality as a sum of necessities and constraints that do not allow us to do what we would like to do or live as we would like to live. Reality is what divides our vision of the imaginary future into two parts, a realizable project and pure fantasy that can never be realized. In this sense, reality shows itself initially as realpolitik, as the sum of everything that can be done, in opposition to an unrealistic view of the conditions and limitations of human actions. This was the actual meaning of 19th century realist literature and art, which presented sober and elaborate descriptions of the disappointments, frustrations, and failures that confronted romantic, socially, and emotionally idealistic heroes when they tried to implement their ideals in reality. From Flaubert's A Sentimental Education to Dostoevsky's The Idiot, European literature of the time described the failure of all attempts to merge art and life. As a result, one could see that nothing that the heroes desired or planned could be realized. Everything that they aspired to was demonstrated to be non-realistic, pure fantasy. The best consequence of this realist tradition was formulated by the movement of 1968. Be realistic, demand the impossible. Thus, the object depicted by realist literature and art was not reality itself as described by the natural sciences, but the human psyche, suffering from the shock of a failed reality test. 19th century realism was, in actuality, psychologism, right?
It's an awkward word. Psychologism.
Reality was understood not as a place of objective scientific investigation, but as a force of oppression that endangered or even crushed the hero.
Yeah. Modern and contemporary art are, by contrast, products of the long history of depsychologization that many critics, for example, Ortega y Gasset, experienced as a history of dehumanization. Avant-garde and post-avant-garde artists wanted their art to be not realist, but real as all the other processes taking place in the world. The artwork was understood as being a thing among other things, like a tree or a car. This did not mean that avant-garde artists did not want to change the world. On the contrary, they radicalized this desire. But they did not appeal to the psyche of the reader, listener, or spectator to achieve this goal. Rather, they understood art as a specific kind of technology that was able to change the world by technical means. In fact, the avant-garde tried to turn art spectators into inhabitants of the artwork so that by accommodating themselves to the new conditions of their environment, these spectators would change their sensibilities and attitudes. Speaking in Marx's terms, art can thus be seen as either part of the superstructure or part of the material base. In other words, art can be understood as either ideology or technology. The radical artistic avant-garde pursued the second technological way of world transformation. This was pursued most radically by the avant-garde movements of the 1920s, Russian constructivism, Bauhaus, and distigil, or yeah. We got a nice painting here. It's a textile design.
Textile of hammers and sickles.
Hammers and sickles. A very nice gouache on paper by Lyubov Popova.
Very nice.
Very, very nice. I would get some pants.
Yes.
Like some real nice, like breezy capri pants with those hammers and sickles. And then I would just be like so ready to walk around in the sunshine.
Mm.
Yeah. And just, hey, it's like very, very fresh, very, very sweet communist.
Yeah, it looks really harmless when it's like a very small little pattern.
Yeah, and people walk up, they're like, is that Lacoste or something? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
Excuse me.
Yeah, wrong wasp.
Should I go? I
guess yeah.
However, the avant-garde never fully succeeded in its quest for the real because the reality of art, its material side, which the avant-garde tried to themize, was permanently re-aestheticized. These thematizations were subjected to the standard of conditions of art representation. The same can be said for institutional critique. Damn, this is good.
Art fave. Yes. Yeah. That's why I was like, yo, ooh. People are going to like this.
The same can be said for institutional critique, which also tried to themize the profane. Factual side of art institutions. Like the avant-garde, institutional critique remained inside art institutions. However, this situation has changed in recent years due to the internet, which has replaced traditional art institutions as the main platform for production and distribution of art. Now the profane, factual, real dimension of art is themized by the internet. Indeed, contemporary artists usually work using the internet and also put their works on the internet. Artworks by a particular artist can be found on the internet in the context of other information about the artist. One finds there their biography, other works, political activities, critical reviews, personal details, etc.
Everything.
Artists use the internet.
Don't use my data, though.
Artists use the internet not only to produce art, but also to buy tickets, make restaurant reservations, conduct business, etc. All these activities take place in the same integrated space of the internet, and all of them are potentially accessible to other internet users. Here the artwork becomes real and profane because it is integrated with information about its author as a real profane person. Art is presented on the internet as a specific kind of practical activity, as documentation of a real working process taking place in the real offline world. Indeed, on the internet, art operates in the same space as military planning, tourist business capital flows, etc.
It's very Hito.
It really is.
Yeah.
Google shows, among other things, that there are no walls in internet space
except for firewalls.
Bam.
The word documentation is crucial here. In the wake of recent decades, the documentation of art has increasingly been integrated into art exhibitions and art museums alongside traditional artworks. However, art documentation is not art. It merely refers to an art event or exhibition or installation or project that we assume to have really taken place. On the internet, art documentation finds its legitimate place. It refers to art as its real, external referent taking place in reality itself. one can say that avant-garde and post-avant-garde art has finally achieved its goal to become a part of reality. But this reality is not one which we are confronted or in the middle of which we live. Rather, it is a reality of which we are informed. In the contemporary world, we are de facto confronted not with art, but with information about art. Mm-hmm. We can follow what is going on in art milieus the same way we follow what is going on in other spheres of social life by using contemporary social networks like Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Bop, bop, bop.
It is this positivist. I can do it. It is this positivist facticity of contemporary art that produces a nostalgia for realism. If art becomes a real practice, a legitimate part of reality, then discontent with reality turns into a discontent with art and all its institutions. Damn, that's me though.
Yeah, right?
Damn, I see myself in that.
That was actually, people quoted this back at me in the group, and I was like, yeah, no. I mean, That's my jumping off point, you guys. This is why I'm here. I want to know what to do with the discontent.
Let's do it. Yeah, dude, that rocks.
Yeah. It's so plainly put here though. Accessible.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's like what's nice about reading art theory after, you know, training to become an artist is like it's speaking in the practice that we've been taught, right? And like, I don't know.
It depends because I guess like for me, I've been going through a lot of these works by different thinkers who have honestly like not a very good relationship to craft,
right,
and to like the impetus for making an object to begin with. And I think a lot of people will easily kind of like write off a lot of history and also like mischaracterize movements that they don't feel any connection to.
Yeah, yeah, they'll just write shit off.
Yeah. But this is nice because, like, you know, Boris Groys, I mean, he spends a lot of time thinking about, like, how to bring class consciousness into an art critique, and, like, that we're sort of, like, always struggling to keep those narratives invigorated and, like, close to the work that we're looking at without it becoming this, like, a horrible, didactic, unfun lesson. Like, because that's the thing about art as well. Like, there has to be a maintenance of, like, the attractive value.
Yeah, it just makes me not want to do it. Like, when I get down to it, sometimes I just feel like, what's the point of trying to keep making this stuff when I should just be out in the, you know, organizing or whatever.
Right.
Then I come right back again eventually.
Yeah. Well, there's like the therapeutic value, but then there's also this sort of like, I just can't stop thinking about the realm of value and what you can do when you create a working philosophy for yourself out of like this lineage of,
mm-hmm,
all of these discourses. And like when you see something that's occurring in the moment and you're able to describe it and then encapsulate it and make it portable, it's like the joke that we had in our conversation before about like Marx and Bakunin. You know, there is still a value to be had for someone who's like thinking critically about like a making something for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're sometimes made to feel bad for doing intellectual labor or something, because it's like
hoity-toity. Hate smart people. People hate it when you act smart around them. They get all annoyed. They're like, "I know. Don't try to tell me something. I already know." I'm like, well, if you already knew, then why are you angry instead of excited that someone else knows?
Let's talk. Like, I'm just trying to talk.
I'm lonely.
Let's just talk.
I'm lonely and I want to read you my favorite writing.
I read this guy. I'm going to read it to you now.
Please, please love me.
Okay, okay. So
this audiobook goddamn rules.
Okay. If art becomes a real practice, a legitimate part of reality, then discontent with reality turns into a discontent with art and all its institutions, the art market, exhibition practices, etc. And this discontent, this conflict with reality, calls for a new description, the new realism. But why can such a description only be an artistic description? The answer to this question is obvious. Discontent with the reality, insofar as it does not manifest itself through violent protest or revolutionary action, remains hidden and is thus always under the suspicion of being fictional. If I hate my job, but nevertheless do it, there's no possibility to objectively prove my discontent with the reality of my existence. This discontent remains fictional. As such, it can be described by literature and art, which have traditionally been regarded as domains of the fictional, but cannot become a subject of serious scientific study.
Word. You gotta externalize that shit. Damn, man. Dude. Yo, are you complaining about your job yet? Because you should be. Otherwise, how are we gonna know if you really hate it or not?
You gotta let us know.
Sound off in the comments.
it's like a form of like workers' inquiry, but it's like a picture.
Yeah. So that's art.
It's art.
That's it. Yeah. Here's what I'm seeing, guys. I'm seeing things. Maybe they're there or not, but this is what I'm seeing. For a very long time, the origin of a given artwork was sought in the psyche of the artist who created it. This was the time of psychological realism in literature, art, and the humanities. The revolt against 19th century psychologism, which determined the fate of art in the 20th century, was provoked by a very obvious methodological observation. The origin of an artwork cannot be found in the psyche of its creator because it is impossible to access the psyche. An external spectator cannot penetrate an artist's subjectivity, but nor can artists themselves discover their inner psyche life by means of introspection. It was concluded that the psyche itself is purely fictional and as such cannot serve as an explanatory term for cultural history.
Fuck off, Freud.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Isn't that sick? It's like, all of those people touting Freud so that they could totally take away from a class analysis are like, shit, you can't say that my stuff's fake. I built this house of cards off of other cards.
It's science. Fuck you.
Pseudoscience.
It's nothing.
It's pseudoscience.
That rocks.
Accordingly, art and literature began to reject psychologism. The human figure came to be dissolved in the play of colors and forms, or in the play of words, which honestly, fuck that abstraction too. The reality of image and text became autonomous from representations of psychology, be it the psychology of the author or the psychology of his or her characters. Of course, the strategy of de-psychologization seems perfectly legitimate. Indeed, the psyche cannot be accessed and scientifically investigated. However, this does not mean that the assumption that there is a psyche, i.e. that there is an internal discontent with the reality that cannot be diagnosed externally, can be rejected as purely fictional.
All right. Sorry.
No, it's cool. Me too.
This becomes clear when one goes back to Hegel's description in the phenomenology of the spirit, of the moment when self-consciousness and the assumption of self-consciousness of the other initially emerges. In this moment, we experience the other as a danger, even as a mortal danger. Of course, we are subjected to many natural or technologically produced dangers, but these dangers do not aim at us personally. We experience them as accidental. However, we cannot experience as accidental someone's attempt to kill us by, for example, shooting us. We tend to ask ourselves why someone would want to do this to us. And our attempt to answer this question produces a series of fantasies, conjectures, and projections concerning the psyche of the potential killer. These projections never lead to any final result, but at the same time, they seem unavoidable. Today, we can observe this phenomenon almost daily when the media offers psychological explanations and speculations regarding this or that terrorist act. In other words, post factum, after the violent terrorist excess has happened, external observers are ready to accept the assumption that the subject of this violent act lived in a state of discontent with the reality of his everyday existence. Even if at the same time the news coverage almost always stresses that this subject seemed quiet and satisfied with his social environment. In other words, before the violent act happens, inner psychological discontent seems fictional, but after the act takes place, it becomes retrospectively real. Time and again in his novels, Dostoevsky made fun of these retrospective attempts to psychologize a crime. But these very novels present nothing less than Dostoevsky's own attempts to do the same. The entirety of psychological literature is basically crime literature. Damn. Yeah. It treats human beings as especially dangerous animals. Dangerous precisely because they are psychological animals.
I thought that was interesting.
That one's good.
Yeah, because we were talking before about how if you have like a causal relationship to your environment, it's just like, oh, then we can start looking at crime like, well, we've got 10 more schools, so then we'll have like 100 less criminals because people are all actually just like plug them ins and you can like change their psychological reactions to things because you somehow know what is going on inside of them already, and then you know what they want or need. So then
I kind of see it as like a sort of phrenology for crimes or something. Like,
right. It's like it's like a predictive
minority report.
Yeah, and it feeds into like the idea of what happens with these algorithms where it's like, right. Oh, well, we can predict if you want, you know, X, Y, and Z thing off wish.com, then we're gonna like,
right,
you know the fourth purchase.
Yeah, I really liked thinking about this one in the this part I just read in regards to like lone gunman style shooters.
Yeah, totally.
When I wasn't thinking of like religious terrorism.
We're never gonna know about the Mandalay Bay shooter because he died, and like, how are we ever gonna know why did he shoot? Like, cause he fucking had an idea to do it.
Right.
Because that's how he wanted to go out. He just did it because he did it. He wanted to externalize the discontent
that he felt.
Like, well, what do you mean? Like, you want, I mean, like, would it have made more sense if he wrote a letter? Like, he didn't want to live the way he was living. He wanted to live and shoot. That's why it's like, oh my gosh, people really can just do things.
People, yeah, I start to wonder, how do we quell discontent, right?
But you can't.
I don't know, estrogen in the water supply.
Oh my gosh. I know. Well, hey, look, it's a spoof, you guys. It's not,
parody. Parody.
Hey, it's parody. Parody. Hey, hey. We are not planning any discontented terrorist attacks on the city's water supply.
I mean, is it terrorism if it's just going to chill everyone out? I don't know.
Yeah. You know what's the chillest you can be is dead. Oh boy. Hey, we're cool. We're cool. We're just
No. I'm just becoming one of those guys who are like, yeah, once weed's legalized, it's gonna be no war.
Yeah, totally. I really like this idea though that like all attempts to like work out the psychological backgrounds of a character end up as crime literature.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, Dostoevsky did do Crime and Punishment, so like he really is like putting the cornerstone on it, but it's like thinking about that applied to like Henry James or something where there's so much internal dialogue.
Yeah, or Les Mis or some shit. Yeah. Like where it's just like, why did you do it to feed my family? And it's like, instead of that, it's like incels who are like, to feed my sexual desire.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this very fully realized background story.
I'm Elliot Rogers. Yeah. I want to kill women.
Yes. Yeah. I wrote this. And then I did it. Really. Fuck. Yeah. It is weird. Like, it's weird how we can't really, like, loosen ourselves from that. Like, when experiencing phenomenological like moments of this, like, oh, this is an event, mm-hmm. like in the capital E sense, mm-hmm. and like what are the attributes of said event, and how is it possible that a rational framework can be built to manage the chaos that is the true event. And then, like, that, how do we then represent that, mm-hmm. it, through, like, these commodified means?
Right.
And, like, what are we losing every time we do that?
Yeah. I mean, right now we're looking at maybe losing our Second Amendment rights to bear arms against... Yeah.
It's like, well, you know. Really, really, dang.
Sorry, I've become that type of communist.
I like the Second Amendment.
I've been there for a bit, yeah.
Cops are not...
Disarm the cop first. Yeah. That's my only thing. Disarm the cops first. Come
yes.
on.
As soon as the cops get rid of their guns...
Then we can talk.
Yeah.
Then we can talk.
Then you can buy ours back.
Yeah, exactly.
And immediately melt them.
Yeah.
And yes. You can use that metal to make pennies.
And give them to me in exchange for my gun.
Yeah. Yeah. If you take my gun, you better make it into money. That's all I'm saying.
And give it back to me. Yeah. Because it was mine.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was mine. I bought it. Just give it back to me in the form of my money that I had before I had my gun. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, this sounds like a plan.
Cool. We figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we're fixing crime over here. Listen to this. Oh my God. Okay. The return of realism means a de facto return of psychology and psychologism. Oh no.
Oh,
it's
gosh,
damn, it's back.
Fuck, it's back.
And indeed, one can see this return in the new popularity of the psychological novel, psychological cinema, psychological theater, and in a small circle of contemporary art, the increasing presence of photography and video works that thematize the psychology of the artist who created them, like a little identity thing going on, and mm-hmm. or the protagonists who inhabit them. Mm-hmm. The reason for this return is obvious. The interpretation of art as techne was closely connected to the expectations of avant-garde and many post-avant-garde artists that art would give a certain direction to technological progress, leading it towards a utopian telos, or at least compensating for its destructive aspects. Mm. In our time, these hopes seem to have been dashed. The dynamic of technological progress has resisted attempts to impose any kind of control on it. It is this resistance to being controlled by any subjective artistic project that has made technological progress into reality. It is this very telling that contemporary post-Deleuzian neo-Dionysian accelerationists and realist admirers of technological progress explain their admiration in exclusively psychological terms as the ecstasy of a self-annihilation that produces extreme intensities in their psyche.
Well, that made me think... Oh, okay. Oh, we're good. Sorry. I was checking the...
Yeah, we got a little screen.
That made me think about, like, you know, neoliberalism, end of history stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And, like, that, how the art sort of reflected that for a while. Like, it was just sort of like, we embrace the market.
And you can kind of formalism. Think of it in the terms of like the century of the self thing, where it's like the creation of the individual. Like,
you were literally selling ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the birth of the psychological probing is it's like this, it's like all of these tools to poke into like your motives or whatever are made because like the individual is so,
it's
like,
commodified.
Yeah,
the individual's identity is commodified into the art market, and thus, that's what it was for a while.
You have found the extremity of your alienation.
Fuck
yo.
Yeah, that sucked for a while.
I mean, it still does suck.
It still does suck.
Well, yeah, because it seems like, you know, it's like the return of realism. And then I see like this, the all of the kind of like psychological forms of artwork is really just like the attempt to regain control over the subjective and reinstate its importance. And there's just this moment where it's like, yeah, we have been sort of like decimated and like atomized as a society, but then we are able to kind of like, you know, it's like every resistance movement is like taking the thing that's happening to you and then like using it as a new source of power by like incorporating it.
Yeah. What about this in the essay, this, the next picture is a photograph with acrylic on it. And it's like, somebody painting over themselves.
Yeah. It's like, this woman, Helena Almeida, she's like painting blue over her reflection.
Yeah. So you only see the back of her head and the front of her reflection has been, you can kind of see it through the blue. Ghosted. So like a little ghost, but she's painting over it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like
reclaiming.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have the power to, I don't know what to.
Well, like you were just saying, right?
Obliterate my own reflection.
Well, what if I take this back? What if I, you know?
Yeah. I'm in control of whether or not this exists.
Yeah. Or like it exists on the canvas to sell or whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like you can't have. Well, I mean, this one, it's interesting, like a picture of erasing yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's more complicated than that because it's still yourself, but.
Yeah, it's you performing the act of obfuscating your image and then still like presenting that as then your new incorporated reality of being like, I live without my face. Like, cause I took it away. I didn't want you to see it, but then I don't see it either.
Right. Well, I don't know. I think it's an interesting picture to put in this part of the essay, I'll say.
Yeah, definitely. this essay has like a very well curated set of images to illustrate.
Was it me next or you? I don't even remember.
You.
Okay.
You go.
God, sorry. Realism describes reality not as it is, but as it is psychologically experienced by artists. That's why Marx and Lukács after him, I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, I forget how to, there's like some way to pronounce it.
Liked Balzac and other French authors of the realist school so much.
I think it's Lukács.
Lukács?
I think so.
I'm so bad at accents.
No, I forget. I was listening to some people talk about this work. I think it's Luke. I don't know. I'll try again. Sorry, everybody. Sound off in the Discord. And
who cares? You guys figure it out.
Smarten us up.
Whereas science described social, economic, and political reality as a system, these writers described it psychologically as the place of antagonistic conflicts and despair. In this sense, they theorized the revolutionary potential of the psychological discontent produced by capitalist society, a discontent that was covered up by objective statistical data and that had not yet broken through the surface of everyday life. Fiction becomes reality when it enters reality, when the psychological conflicts described by art lead to revolutionary action. Before this revolutionary moment, realist fiction remains a fiction.
Down the pipeline, we're gonna get some factoids from the Art and Revolution book that it's getting digested currently, but this is sort of like the Wagner model, where Wagner's idea of art and revolution was that the art would spur on social change, because you have to go from like an internal to an external, and we don't know if this is real or not, because we don't even know what psychology is here in Boris Groysland. So there's like lots of competing models. Nobody is right.
Oh man. Well, it's also like, makes me think of like trying to enact like big socialist change through like nationalism versus internationalism, or you know.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's why this stuff seems so applicable, because it's like you can easily apply this understanding of where like fiction meets reality when you talk about a project for socialism, and you think about how do we actually instate a policy, and at what point is the policy like an aestheticized way of life versus like something that's utilitarian, or like when is it a techne versus like,
yeah,
you know, like I mean what part of this, because we get so like excited by ideas that sound simple and beautiful, and it's the same as like looking at a minimal piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I'm not sure, I mean it sounds good, but like I need to see some things externalized. I need some like working models so I can handle it.
I think there was a time in America where like art and fiction were inspiring actual, like, you know, I don't know, actual is the wrong word, but like, you know, like NASA, all this stuff that's like for the betterment of our everyday lives, not for the military fiction in
America, where we were like, what if Nazis could take us to the moon? And then they did.
But people get inspired by sci-fi, legit, and that's why it was fucked up for a while.
Now it's just called speculative fiction, because it's like, oh, it might be living this way.
Yeah, and that's why I got so fucked up when fucking neoliberals like Elon Musk or whatever, just, or like fascist or crypto fascists have like just sort of like taken the imagination and brought it into their realm, and that's why we shouldn't be so fucking dismissive of like those debaucherous like layabout artists,
right?
You know, shouldn't be so shamey of them and their fucking dumbass lifestyles.
God damn these people just like thinking about their environment all the time and like trying to make little pictures about
hear
it
that
and stuff.
Mom and dad,
yeah,
I'm working,
yeah, look at me self-actualize
on the imaginations of my peers.
Yeah,
I genuinely care about that. I genuinely do care about the imagination of my peers and what we are trying to envision with like and bring forth. Like, I really do believe in the end of capitalism.
Yeah.
I really, truly do.
Yeah. But it's just something more like when we say the end of capitalism, we have to make sure that we're not going into, like, you know.
Something worse.
Exactly. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. It's just kind of, and that's where it's important to have theory and to have these sort of, like, you know, you've got to, like, take apart all concepts, judge them, take away all presuppositions, and see what you can actually, like, conceivably act on once you have, like, fully digested the sets of, like, historical inputs. Because, you know, anybody. Yeah, but it's crazy because, you know, it's like everyone is running around online and it sounds like they're all 15 years old just going like, burn the state. And they're like, homie, we're inside of the state. Like,
wait a second.
Just like fucking relax. I mean, I know you're very discontent. Me too.
Well, to be fair, like you know, my favorite philosopher, Pete Tom, says everybody is 16 on the internet.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, right. 16. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. Y'all can drive if you have someone else in the car with you.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah. Wait. Yeah. You're closing.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. We're almost done, everybody. Thus the return. Wait. Did I read that?
I lost where we are.
I fucked up too.
Fucked up.
Realism describes.
Oh,
reality.
I said remains a fiction.
Remains
a
fiction. Okay, thus the return of realism is the return of the psychological and the return of a discontent with reality experienced as an oppressive force. Let me make one last remark here. Realism is often misinterpreted as an art form that depicts the realities that lie beyond the art system, simple people, or the working class. However, the art system, as previously noted, is already part of reality.
Wow.
Guys.
Oh, this guy done already figured it out before we started our podcast. Should have just read this.
Yeah. One episode and you're done. Realism is needed not for its description of the outside of the art system, but for the revelation of the latter's hidden inside, of the discontent with the realities of the art system that its protagonists experience. Only when writers and artists begin to feel like failures in their conflict with reality will they ask themselves what it means to conform to reality, to live a simple life like everybody else
God.
Allegedly does.
I feel seen.
I know, right? An inner psychological problem is projected towards the outside. In his A Confession, Tolstoy wrote that he was curious why simple people do not commit suicide, but instead go on living, even when they must know that life has no meaning or goal. This question led him to take an interest in the way of life of people living beyond privileged literary and intellectual circles. Here, one can ask, of course, if this assumption that simple people are internally, psychologically in conflict with their way of life and experience their life as meaningless is not a pure fiction. Tolstoy's projection of his own inner conflicts onto the psyche of others. However, the violent explosion of the October Revolution posthumously confirmed Tolstoy's diagnosis. Thus, writers and artists, if they want to be realist, have to learn to live with the suspicion that their descriptions of the human psyche are pure fiction until history confirms the realism of their work.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's taking it into this, like, collective sphere of
the,
like,
secret is real.
Yo. The secret is real. It's all about manifestation, yeah. Baby.
So and it has a biography.
Oh yeah, Boris Groys. He shout out to Chris, who was a student of Boris Groys.
Which Chris?
Marchena.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because Groys taught at NYU.
Oh, Oh, cool. He's a philosopher, essayist, art critic, media theorist, and internationally renowned expert on Soviet-era art and literature, especially the Russian avant-garde. His global distinguished professor of whatever, his NYU. French post-structuralism to modern Russian philosophy. Firmly situated in the juncture of aesthetics and politics, theoretically, Gross's work influenced by a number of modern and postmodern philosophers and theoreticians, including Derrida, Baudrillard, Deleuze, and Walter Benjamin.
Cool la la.
I love all those guys. No, yeah. I love Walter Benjamin, but
yeah. It's a strong it's a strong philosophical lineage. I have a little bit of trouble with Boris Groys sometimes because some of his other works, because he gets so like centered on the like Soviet mindset of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Like he tends to see things a lot in this like state organized forces larger than the individual kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then it is America as a monolith that is making the art, and then Russia is another monolith, and they're kind of like huge mech suits that are battling each other. And it's like, it's fun, but it's also like, yeah, there's actually people inside the suits.
Yeah.
So, but I like this piece because he finally like breaks down into, yes, I admit it, there are these psychological forces we're contending with, but we can't prove that they're real, which is like also sort of a weird solipsistic take to have, where it's like calling the psyche a fiction is like, it's like dipping your toe into a problematic area. Yeah. Where you don't just take it for granted that people's psyches are reality. But then he like brings it back into a safety zone by saying like, oh, no, it's just that they have to be expressed.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're expressed, they become real.
Right.
The psyches become real.
Yeah.
But only when they're expressed.
Yeah.
Something.
Which is and like. Then,
like, but it's like, it's weird because it's like, oh, okay. So are people like. Is that like propaganda? Like, is that like people, or is it just like people absorbing whatever, like communication or whatever? Like,
oh, I think it's like if you if you think about someone who's who is asleep and having a dream, does that is that dream not a part of their psychology? And are we saying that it's like impossible to prove that there are dreams?
Right.
Like, no, we can scientifically map, we can see the parts of the brain that are lighting up. And there is like a lot of neuroscience that backs up the fact that there are, in fact, I don't know. It's like there's people are having psychological realities. So there is like a premise to this piece that is faulty.
Yeah, true.
Not acceptance there. But I like the idea that. Some kind of like alchemical process happens when you push the thought into a material.
Right. I think that's true. I think that like, you know, it's a really interesting time that we live in that we can just like look up shit in our pocket whenever we want and be like, is that possible? Oh, I guess it happened here and here and here. So I guess it's possible. Cool.
Yeah, like the shift to the information instead of it being like the, it's like kind of a leveling.
Yeah. Because before we were kind of all cordoned off into like, it's never happened in our town in over 400 years or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and like, did you even have a town 400 years ago? Well, probably.
It's interesting. Yeah, like break down the barriers of possibilities.
And then just that, like, I mean, he's kind of writing in broad strokes about the internet having a lot to do with, like, obviously he's like, he's on the side of democratizing information.
Yeah, just that's what, and then it feels like it. I don't know. It feels like the Sanders campaign is a testament to this stuff. Becoming reality,
it's spreading,
it's happening.
The idea that this is possible, as long as we keep actually talking to each other,
yeah,
And we have been pretty much like denied by most networks. Like any kind of large media outlet has done their best to dissuade voters from this reality that we are making for ourselves.
But then we talk to each other and we get the real real.
Yeah, get the real.
We don't take the manufactured shit.
Get the real squared.
And it's very cool. And I do worry that they're going to make everybody afraid to keep doing that. I worry about that sometimes, but for now it's really cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, that kind of seems to mirror the general trajectory of how we experience all liberation. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I mean, gosh, if you got too free in any one direction, perhaps you would go ahead and change reality. That isn't good for us, the people who are controlling it.
The ones with you know, all the power and resources that we're hoarding for ourselves. It's scary. A little bit.
Quit pointing your finger at my resources.
I mean, like, they're literally killing activists, like, already. Like, I don't...
Oh, God.
Like,
I mean, I just thought about the butterfly activists who were getting killed as just, like, the most ridiculous murders. Like, it's like, hi, we're activists and we're protesting because we don't want monarch butterflies to get killed. Oh, yeah? Well, die. You die instead now. Because we need to kill butterflies and people. It's like, what more heavy-handed symbolism can you get?
Yo.
Butterfly activists getting killed.
It's so grim, but, you know, the fascists are bound to fucking lose, dude. I mean, look at they're fucking brave-ass people standing up to fucking Bolsonaro all the fucking time. We can stand up to fucking...
Yeah.
Our bullshit leaders, too. And, like, we can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do this. It's just gonna be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Things are gonna get really weird. Things are just... I keep thinking about, like, you know, this way in this essay talking about, like, the kind of how reality can go in and out and, like, you know... I keep visualizing it as this sort of, like, I project my fantasy of a better world outward and see actual, like, effects of manifestation, not to get too woo-woo, but, like, mm-hmm. you know, on a good day, I'm going around really feeling like traversing the city is easy because I'm, like, oh, got that door for you. Oh, you need a dollar. Oh, get ahead. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm meeting friends. Oh, I'm sharing with them. Oh, we're going to a protest. Oh, everybody's in love with each other here. We're like expanding this feeling that there is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And then I like see the lens kind of sweep back and just like imagine the dystopia that's possible in its wake. And it's just so weird that like all of it is possible at the same time. And just like, all of the possibilities are like completely linked to perception, which is linked to like how much I slept the night before.
Right. Yeah. You could just be moody.
Yeah.
You could just be hungry.
And that's what they said about Hitler.
Maybe they were nice to him when he was in art school.
Yeah. He could have just been respected as a painter.
Because it's not just, because that's the thing people don't fucking remember, is that it's not just Hitler. It takes a lot of fucking people.
It takes a huge economic recession, depression. It takes a lot of starvation, a lot of frustration, kind of like the stuff that's going on in America. It takes a lot of dismantling of social programs.
Right.
To the point where people's reality is seen as not worthwhile and the discontent mounts.
Right.
And they want to artfully destroy everything.
Yeah.
In a great cleansing fire.
Yeah.
Kills millions.
Yeah. Fucking liberals need to get a fucking clue.
Honestly.
They really fucking need to get a fucking clue. Honestly. I'm sick of fucking liberals, dude.
Yeah, hashtag resistance. Can't wait to see what you guys do. I mean, God, same, same.
Yeah, you guys really are gonna fucking do something by, you know, marching back and forth in a line. And
well, you know, they do a great job of saying that they don't like bad things.
And the, yeah, yeah.
Like, bad things are bad.
But bad things don't extend to fucking Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is queen.
Nancy.
She ripped up the speech. She ripped a paper.
Oh my God.
Whereas if she really wanted.
She make a death camp. She signed a paper.
If she really wanted to make a change, she would have vacated her fucking seat years ago.
Mm.
That's how you make a fucking change.
Or she could just become a leftist.
Yeah, I like that.
The choice is yours.
Oh. All right. I guess that we should wrap up. We've been here forever.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Love ya. I'm scared if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and make it have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. If you just drive a truck, I'm scared if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care, cause I just love your company. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun.